In August, we took a look at how mass shootings in the U.S. may be making you uncomfortable in public spaces like movie theaters, music festivals, and churches. Well, today, people are also having a difficult time navigating public spaces because of coronavirus fears.
Kathleen Genestra from Jensen Beach, and oh hell yes, it has changed the way I interact with and in the public. I walk with a big package of wipes in the crook of my arm. I go as few places as possible, and I interact with as few people as possible. And I'm in the over 60 demographic, so I'm being very careful.
This week, Democratic candidates Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden canceled events because of risks associated with the coronavirus, and Washington Governor Jay Inslee is now planning to ban gatherings of more than 250 people in Seattle. As COVID-19 continues to spread, let's take a look at how people are navigating public spaces. Sarah Jensen Carr is an assistant professor of architecture, urbanism, and landscape at Northeastern University. Sarah, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you.
Some people describe cities as incubators for diseases. How does the design of our cities impact the spread of diseases?
So the thought of cities as being an unhealthy place to inhabit really dates back to around the Industrial Revolution. You know, if you think about back then, there was a lack of coordinated waste removal. There was lots of sewage in the streets. And so just the very act of people were very crowded as well in tenement housing. So, you know, just the very act of living in the city was thought to be unhealthy. Cholera, yellow fever, other filth diseases really racked dense urban areas. The effect of cholera and yellow fever, though, what it did do was it spurred a massive infrastructural reinvention of cities. So, you know, that was around the time we had a lot of our waste infrastructure built in the United States. So, you know, moving pipes underground in a lot of cities, they even changed streets from cobblestones to smooth pavement, as it was thought the space in between the cobblestones could hold germs, and smooth pavement made it easier to wash down streets. That said, you know, the thought of cities as incubators in disease really persisted, I would say, into the late 20th century. Even though, you know, I would say until now, we really haven't thought about sanitation and infectious disease in cities in the United States and the developed world. And that's because much of our infrastructure, sanitary infrastructure, is the same that's been installed in cities just after the Industrial Revolution. So it's interesting to have this conversation now where these sort of like fear of density is coming back and, you know, these concerns about sanitation.
So the so-called fear of density, do you think that the mass closure and avoidance of public spaces throughout the country, really around the world, is an overreaction to the coronavirus?
I mean, we don't know, right? Right now we're in this complete state of uncertainty, and any uncertainty causes the most panic when we don't know the vectors. I can't say it's an overreaction. You know, what's most important now is to just sort of, you know, flatten that curve and not overtax our health system.
Do you think that, you know, the way the global response has been occurring now is in any way different from the way we've responded to other health crises that may be linked to density?
You know, first I'll say I've written about the cholera epidemic and other epidemics and how that's transformed the American urban landscape. What's important to realize is that the built environment, our public space, our streets, our buildings, in terms of reacting to diseases, that often doesn't happen until 10 years down the road, and then we don't see the effects of that another 10 years later. And some of those interventions did not work. They were actually detrimental to health. I certainly hope that COVID-19 does not last that long. So we'll see. We're just sort of in the beginning of this right now and seeing what happens.
When you say some changes to cities in response to diseases were detrimental to health, can you give me an example?
Yeah, well, even though the sanitation movement did transform our cities much for, you know, for the better, and also required a coordinated response between public health departments and urban planning departments, which, you know, hadn't been seen before and honestly hasn't been seen a lot since. We're still trying to coordinate those departments to think about public health in our cities. It also resulted in the massive displacement, mostly of the working class and immigrant neighborhoods. And so, you know, thinking about if we do make interventions in the built environment, how do we do it equitably is very important.
The Takeaway did a segment about the impact mass shootings have on our relationship to these public spaces. Do you think that the coronavirus will change the way we view public spaces as safe?
I think the conversation, thinking about transmission of the coronavirus in public, I think it's more concentrated on public transportation right now because there's a lot more surfaces. I mean, one thing that we don't have in public spaces, there's not a lot of surfaces to touch, right? You're mostly sitting or you're mostly walking through it. I mean, that said, you know, just anecdotally, I noticed the playground in my neighborhood was a little bit more empty this past weekend. But, you know, as we're just at the beginning of this, it's just, it's very hard to tell right now what the net effect will be.
And finally, what should we be talking about with our friends and family if we're feeling anxious about going into public spaces?
Well, wash your hands. You know, I have three small children, so that's a constant conversation in my house right now. But I think also, you know, even though for a large portion of the population, maybe asymptomatic, but thinking about, you know, how we go out in public space right now can affect those that are most vulnerable. That's a very important conversation to have. What actions, you know, do we take personally, even though they may not come back to affect us right away, but how are they affecting those most vulnerable? And that's a conversation we should be having, you know, not just for epidemics, but, you know, very pressing issues like climate change as well.
Sarah Jensen Carr is an assistant professor of architecture, urbanism, and landscape at Northeastern University. Sarah, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Duarte.
So is coronavirus changing the way you navigate public spaces? You're talking to us about it.
Hi, this is Patrick from Portland, Oregon. Overall, still going to concerts, restaurants, and unfortunately due to work navigating hospitals every now and then.
Hi, this is Rachel from Louisville, Kentucky. My toddlers and I have been battling colds on and off since December. Now, I know that some people will freak out if we are at a gathering and we start coughing. And I have chosen not to go to some events.
My name is Kat Meisler and I'm calling from Las Vegas, Nevada. I've canceled a trip to Chicago for fear that I might bring the virus into my mom's home there. She's 81. Canceling plans to go to a show tonight here in Las Vegas. And I'm debating whether or not to do a trip to California.
My name's Joseph. I'm in Cannes, France, and I just jumped on an airplane Sunday night to head back to France to visit my mother. And I had very empty airports, very empty flights, very good service. And the scare here is pretty intense. They're canceling like the film festivals and other things that are going on locally. So I went to Monte Carlo today and it was very quiet. Hopefully this blows over.
877-8-MY-TAKE is our number. This is The Takeaway.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.